Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 29th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good, but where did the month go?
It's amazing how fast it all flies by, huh?
Yeah.
So, let's begin the show by talking about something that is fairly boring. Let's just be frank. Mm-hmm. It's boring stuff. But it's something that the Supreme Court spoke on this week. And it has to do with a case that was brought before the Federal Energy Regulatory Committee, the FERC, it's called FERC. As a climate hawk, people will probably begin to hear more and more about FERC because FERC is involved in approving pipelines and the like. Mm-hmm. But FERC, I guess, in 2011 did something good, which was to insist that utilities pay their customers. I think that means you and me. Mm-hmm. If we as customers reduce our electricity usage during peak days, like on like really, really hot, hot summer days, right? Mm-hmm. So FERC said that was a requirement, because I guess they can do that. And they were challenged in court as to whether or not they had the authority, and the whole thing went to the Supreme Court. And tell me, DR, what did the illustrious judges of the SCOTUS tell us?
It won a 6-2 ruling with Justice Samuel Alito recusing. The Supreme Court basically upheld the decision by the FERC, and it's being praised as a boost for clean energy and a boost for energy conservation, and thus a boost for the cause of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The New York Times in an editorial on January the 28th praised the decision, saying that this is a, quote, well-reasoned decision which will save consumers money and improve the reliability of the electric grid. So it's going to be interesting to see how this falls out. There's a lot of speculation that because you had six justices ruling to uphold a policy that its critics condemn as sort of wasteful and government overreach, does this suggest that perhaps there are six judges who will ultimately rule to uphold the EPA's Clean Power Plan? So we'll find that out in a few years. But it's interesting to see how things will play out.
Well, I guess issues of electricity prices and who gets charged what are fairly dry things, but I think mm-hmm. that it's we can unpack this a little bit and say that everyone knows that on really, really hot summer days, mm-hmm. Everyone wants electricity for their air conditioning, right? Mm-hmm. And so the electricity industry, right, from the producers and the deliverers and all that kind of stuff, they have to scale their system. They have to scope everything to provide enough power on the hottest days. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone is talking about, the company I work on, they turn the power down. They go brown in the summertime during the very hot days. And so, but now what the Supreme Court has approved is the fact that you can be paid to do that. And as a consequence, the utilities will not have to build extra power plants, right? Mm-hmm. On a really hot day, they can start giving out money and people will turn their thermostats up and are down, as the case may be, but they'll save electricity, make some money, and you don't have to burn any fossil fuel. And it's a really great way to manage the electricity grid. So the going forward, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
And I mean, you'll have people who would be able to, you know, do your dishes in the evening at night when the electricity rates are lower. Mm-hmm. They were saying that since you can now manage the price of electricity according to demand, it helps the solar power, because the solar power or wind turbines tend to be going during the day when there's more demand. And so there's a lot of practical benefits for that kind of utopian future grid we keep thinking about, where you know how much you're being charged and you you put a price on that kind of behavior, right?
Exactly. And in the conclusion of the New York Times editorial, they emphasize something very important. Quote, the Supreme Court is clearly saying that regulators have broad discretion to enforce federal laws. Their job is not to protect the profits of a segment of an industry. Regulators ought to do what is in the public interest, which is exactly what the Energy Commission's rule does, unquote. So again, it demonstrates that the court, or at least six justices on the court, recognize that what the FERC was doing served the public good. And just because certain power plant organizations complained about it doesn't mean that the FERC was wrong. In fact, they were very, very right.
I think it's you know, sometimes this stuff descends into real. Being a climate hawk can end up being talking about things that are fairly boring. But in this case, you got the philosophy, at least, of the Obama administration now permeating through the FERC, and you see good results. So, I mean, again, this all, I think at some level, rebounds to Obama's credit. But let me shift gears a little bit, DR. You kind of hinted at something else important that happened this past week. Is it like 10 days ago now, I think? So again, to set the stage, there's a court, it's called the Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. I think it's the Ninth Circuit Court. Circuit, of course, being how the judges used to ride around from different places to have their court. But the Circuit Court of Appeals gets these very sort of esoteric cases that are bumped up from lower courts, and they resolve big issues. So when the president issued his climate plan, the Clean Power Plan, as you remember, the Clean Power Plan is a lot like Obamacare in the sense that every state has to produce a plan, just like under the Affordable Care Act, every state had to make an insurance exchange. Here, every state has to make a climate plan. And of course, some states sued, and they sued immediately upon the introduction of the Clean Power Plan, actually before anyone had suffered any harm, really, which is kind of a criteria. But anyway, this premature case got up to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., DR, and I'll let you say, what happened when these rogue states' attorneys general got to the Supreme Court and asked them to gut the Obama plan?
Well, on January the 21st, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals refused to grant a preliminary injunction blocking the implementation of the Clean Power Plan while the case goes to trial, basically finding that the plaintiffs failed to prove that they were suffering, that they would be suffering an irreparable harm if the Clean Power Plan was implemented while the case went on. And it's noted that the case is going to start on June the 2nd. In from there, the LA Times reported that the plaintiffs put in an emergency request with Chief Justice John Roberts trying to get him to issue essentially a preliminary injunction blocking the implementation of the Clean Power Plan until the entirety of the trials, both the trial and the appeals are resolved. And as of yet, there's been no response from Chief Justice John Roberts, but you just see the desperation of the plaintiffs in these cases desperately trying to temporarily, if not permanently, gut the Clean Power Plan, even though it's been reported that many of these states that the attorney generals are representing, many of these states are developing contingency plans to essentially adhere to the Clean Power Plan in the event they lose. So basically, you know, you'd figure that instead of trying to make these sort of efforts to try to declare something unconstitutional that the Supreme Court in 2007 said the EPA has the right to do, you'd figure they would just take the common sense approach and put together a plan that would comply with the Clean Power Plan. But no, they want to basically waste taxpayer money and whine and moan about something that in 2007 the U.S. Supreme Court already said the EPA has the right to do.
I think Sting said it best, right? To hurt, they try and try.
Yep.
I think for my clarity on the issue, what happened was these attorneys generals asked for an injunction to stop the implementation of the president's plan immediately because they felt they were at such risk. And the D.C. court said, no, we're not going to stop it now. We're going to have the trial. And really what that does is it allows the EPA to continue with the development of the plan. And every day that it stays alive, you know, more and more good things happen. And so it was a real victory for the president's plan to not be killed in the cradle. Right? Because the reverse would have been they have to stop all the development of the Clean Power Plan until 2018 and 2019 when it finally makes its way to the Supreme Court.
And you can just imagine the amount of denialists celebrating that would have occurred if the apprentice received the plenary injunction.
And so then just to double back, you had said that because there was so much support on the Supreme there was support on the Supreme Court for the demand response thing from FERC, then you say, okay, maybe those same six people will show up to defend the president's clean power plan when it finally makes it there, right?
Well, that's the in all the coverage, there has been a lot of shock being expressed that Justices Anthony Kennedy and Chief Justice John Roberts voted with Justice Elena Kagan, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Justice Stephen Breyer to uphold the demand response rule. So that suggests that at least there is a general recognition of the wisdom of these policies to ultimately reduce carbon pollution, and that does suggest that perhaps there is a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court that will ultimately uphold the Clean Power Plan.
I have all six of my fingers crossed. I have five fingers on one hand, one on the other, all crossed. All right, so there you go. There's a couple of big top level legal cases, which, you know, most people don't even want to think about, but these are important things that grind on. And so we've tried to summarize those. The other thing, though, people will have much more of an immediate imagery around, I think. So everyone has seen the image of the burning, roaring torch on top of a oil rig that's just burning away, right? This is flaring off natural gas. This is what they've done for decades because it's expensive to... So when you drill a hole in the ground, sometimes you get methane gas leaking out. That's not what you really wanted. You really wanted the liquid gasoline, I guess. And this gas is difficult to capture, and there was not really much market for it. So in the past, these guys would just, you know, toss a cigarette into the top of the well, and you'd get this, you know, burning, flaring of stuff. Well, of course, the president has whole sway over federal lands, right, as a representative of the people, much to the chagrin of the folks out in the bird sanctuary. But anyway, the president has the right to issue executive orders, and the president issued an order on methane this week, or the EPA did. Right? So tell me, DR, what did the president say, and how did he say it?
It was actually the Interior Department that proposed this new rule that, according to the New York Times, will curb emissions of methane from oil and gas drilling on public lands. It would force companies to use equipment to capture the leaked gas and raise the costs paid for extracting fuel on government property. Now, remember, that comes on the heels of looking at the regulations affecting how much companies pay to sort of exploit coal on federal land. So this is, I guess, another version of the keep it in the ground strategy by making it cost prohibitive to sort of, you know, exploit natural gas on public lands. The Think of Progress reports that this draft rule will slash the venting, flaring, and leaking of methane, and will do so by requiring the oil and gas industry to take measures to reduce the instances of venting and flaring and to plug leaks through equipment upgrades. This rule is expected to reduce both venting and flaring by at least 41% and could prevent up to 169,000 tons of methane emissions per year. Right. So if fully implemented, this could be a really, really profound move to sort of reduce the damage posed to the climate by natural gas.
I think that, I mean, it is, of course, only on federal land, right? So the president can only order that on but I think there'll be a ripple effect into other places, and you're quite right. Last week or in the State of the Union, the president hinted that he was going to increase the cost for leasing of fracking lands on federal lands. And this week we find out that, yet on top of that, it's going to make it more difficult. You're going to have to capture all that methane. I think it's all good. It's all a good thing. So we're all with a lot with the federal U.S. federal stuff. We have a country to our north, DR, called Canada, which is also a federal system, and that is up in Canada. They have a new premier. They don't call it a president; they call it the premier. He's the head of the I forget which party up in Canada, but anyway, Mr. Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, exchanged pleasantries with someone this week, right, DR? Who did he have a talk with, and what did they talk about?
He exchanged unpleasantries with Leonardo DiCaprio. It was reported by EcoWatch and Vice News that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau recently lectured Leonardo DiCaprio for some of his speeches condemning what DiCaprio calls the corporate greed of fossil fuel companies. And Trudeau, according to media reports, sat down with DiCaprio at a dinner a few days ago, saying that his comments are, quote, unnecessary and hurtful, and suggesting that DiCaprio is being too rhetorically harsh to the fossil fuel industry in Canada. And I have to say, you know, for a guy like Trudeau, who claimed that he was going to sort of remedy the damage done by former Prime Minister Stephen Harper, for him to get on his high horse and beat up on DiCaprio is, I think, profoundly short-sighted. I mean, DiCaprio is trying to use his celebrity to sort of raise awareness about, and he's been doing this for over a decade now. He produced the documentary The 11th Hour. He's produced the documentaries Carbon and Last Hours with Tom Hartman, and he has been trying to use his celebrity to sort of raise awareness and try to remedy the media imbalance that renders this issue, you know, not covered as much as it needs to be. And for Trudeau to basically try to slap DiCaprio around, to basically sort of, you know, rhetorically maul him the way the bear mauled him in The Revenant, is just really, really horrible, I think.
Well, I think I haven't seen that movie yet, but I'll reserve my opinion. But I would come back and say that the other interesting thing that happened up in Canada this past week is that the Canadian government, I believe, decided to at least include in the process of approving new pipelines. They put into that process a consideration of how much greenhouse gas would be emitted, right? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden that is a factor in the approval of new pipelines in Canada. And of course that's important because there's a pipeline that is pretty much on Canadian soil. It's got to come all the way to the East Coast or something, right?
Yep, that's correct. It was reported in Reuters that Canadian officials will now consider the climate impacts when they decide to provide approvals for pipelines and natural gas export terminals. Again, you know, good on Trudeau for doing this, even as he beats up on Leonardo DiCaprio. The new standards, according to Reuters, will apply to the Energy East pipeline by TransCanada Corporation and the expansion of the Trans Mountain pipeline, both of which carry tar sands. That would also apply to a planned LNG export terminal in British Columbia. So it'll be interesting to see to what extent Canada now moves to try to keep things in the ground, as the United States is also moving the same way.
Well, there you go. So this is a good week for the court watchers. Our congratulations to the Supreme Court and the D.C. Circuit Court and the Obama administration, all for doing what looks like the right thing, huh? Mm-hmm. So we'll tell our listeners they can check out links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. Please leave us a comment. Please make a donation to MCAN. It's a worthy organization. You can find us on Facebook @MassClimateAction. You can listen to the show there. If you click through, the link will click you through to the blog. Please share us with your friends. You can listen to our show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.